This is the Deep Side of Dallas. I'm Rudy Bush, Deputy Editorial Page Editor for the Dallas Morning News.
And I'm Paul Corliss, Chief Communications Officer for the University of North Texas System. Dallas and the communities around us are changing. We're here to talk about our history, our future, and where we are today.
On the Deep Side, we dive into local news and issues through candid conversations with people making an impact in Dallas and beyond. And you can stay up to date on every episode and other great shows from our newsroom. Just follow the Dallas Morning News wherever you get your podcast.
Welcome to the Deep Side of Dallas podcast. I'm Paul Corliss, Chief Communications Officer for the University of North Texas System, here with my co-host Rudy Bush. And for sports fans across Texas, springtime means PGA golf with tournaments in Austin, San Antonio, Fort Worth, and the Dallas area within a 6 to 8 week period. So this episode is kind of a special look at the PGA in Greater Dallas with the Byron Nelson in full swing on May 13th, but it's in McKinney and not Dallas. And who better to kind of catch us up on the Byron Nelson's move from Las Colinas to Southern Dallas to McKinney than Tim Kalishaw, lead sports columnist for the Dallas Morning News and longtime ESPN personality. Tim, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. Great to have a colleague with us. And it's interesting. We wanted to have Tim on today because we're going to have the Nelson tournament here. A lot of folks in Dallas, and I'll admit that I was among them, had some hope that this plan to put this course down in Southern Dallas was going to be maybe the spark we needed to change things developmentally in a part of the city that has trouble getting going. And Tim, I wrote about this for a long time, and I know you've written about this tournament even before Las Colinas. You've been involved in it,
right?
So I guess the question that a lot of people have is how this thing went sideways on us and why the Nelson just didn't work down in Southern Dallas.
Yeah, I had a lot of emotions about it going there the first time, the first of the 2 years, one being my own ignorance that I lived then and still do almost downtown in Uptown, so right off Central Expressway. And I thought, oh, this is going to be like a 35-minute drive. I'm going down to wherever this course is. And about 12 minutes later, I was there. And so I had no idea this whole area existed. And then I walk out onto the course, and my first thought was all positive because just walking out, if you remember what it looked like, and it was a links course, and all the trees are off to the side. There's no trees out in the middle of the course.
It feels barren.
And I thought, this looks like I had covered the U.S. Open in Shinnecock Hills in New York, out on Long Island in 2004. Beautiful links-type layout. Looks almost like a British Open with no trees. I thought, this looks like that. This doesn't even look like Dallas. This is going to be great. This is in the morning, the first time I went out there. By the afternoon, when it's starting to heat up, and I realized there is no shade anywhere on this course. And fans are going to melt if they can find the place. And, you know, and then it got into a lot of things that we can get into it with the golf and all. You know, I just thought initially, like you, this is a cool idea. It's time to leave Las Colinas. That was a great venue for the pros and the pros' wives and girlfriends because of the whole the spa and everything there. Tremendous facilities, easy to the airport, easy to get around. This was going to be a challenge for them, but I thought, you know, let's try something. Let's be adventuresome. But I mean, once you realize the heat is going to overwhelm this place, you just cannot pull this off. You could try it in March, but it's probably going to be rainy and cold, and you don't know what weather you're going to get. As long as you're playing in May, you need a little shade in the state of Texas.
That's what I was thinking as well, Tim. When the whole idea got sort of promoted, and just for those people who are listening who don't know why it doesn't have any trees in Southern Dallas, it's built on a piece of City of Dallas property that actually was a dump.
Right.
Part of it an illegal dump and part of it a legal dump, and so they had to put this clay cap over the deal And tree roots will penetrate that clay cap. So part of it was always going to have to be this kind of specially designed course. But I really believed when Mayor Mike Rawlings started pushing this plan that with enough sort of gumption and planning and what they called shade structure, this thing could work. And on that first day down there, I realized, well, that was a bill of goods, and this thing is not going to work. And then the golf was not really good golf, was it?
The golf was not great, even though the field that first year, I'm trying to remember, only two or three of the top 50 were there. Matt Kuchar was one of the highest-rated players, hated the place, tried to be nice about it, but made it kind of clear with some of his mutterings that he wouldn't be back.
Yeah, I had that as a note, too. In the last one that was played there, only two of the top 20 were even there. Players turned their back on it quickly because everybody, as you said, wanted to come to the Four Seasons because it was fun. It was a party weekend.
Right, and it was like, where is the party tent? Where is it for those people? That seems to be gone and certainly not as easy to access as something right off 183 there in Las Colinas, or 114. And Aaron Wise won the first tournament. Nobody had heard of Aaron Wise. He's a million under par. He and Mark Leishman are just, shooting 63s and 64s. So it's not really – they didn't want to make the course too tough. They knew the pros weren't thrilled to be here, so we better give them a few birdies along the way. So they didn't have the toughest pin placements in the world. And that just made – you're just watching a birdie fest out there and kind of a young unknown who has not won since then. Aaron Wise won the tournament. So it wasn't great golf. Now, you would get some of that at Las Colinas, too, although you would get some terrific golf. And some of the first-time winners there would be people like Jason Day and Sergio Garcia and guys who went on to have, amazing careers. The golf was not great. The shade was nowhere to be found. Parking?
Mess.
Very little there.
Yeah.
Ubers were darn expensive.
Press parking was much better than the fan parking, but press parking was parking a lot and riding in a bus over there. But there's some two-lane highways going through there where the traffic was just immense for the fans. So they're trying to take wherever they're coming from. I can't remember if it's the Cotton Bowl or Texas Stadium lots or just all over the city, downtown. Very hard to get to. And I do think, as you mentioned, the party pavilion was a huge part of the other tournament. And once that wasn't a big part of this one, it didn't really have a chance.
And you couldn't even put stakes in the ground because of what you mentioned, Rudy, with the clay cap. You had to, hold down your pavilion stuff with sandbags to keep it from blowing away.
No, I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
That's not helpful either.
That's not helpful. And then, so it kind of brings me back to this thought that I keep having, and I beat myself up a little bit as a reporter around this because as I go back, Tim, and I look at my stories from that time, they probably weren't as critical as they might have been because I did hope that this thing could work, but I'm just wondering, was it doomed from the start? I mean, could this never work as a PGA quality tournament?
I think it was doomed from the start, but I was like you. The first columns I wrote off that first tournament tended to lean toward the positive, even though I knew the golf isn't great and there's some hardships here. It just seemed like something fun, something worth trying. Maybe they'll get better weather. Maybe they'll get moved in the schedule a little bit into April where it's not so hot because the PGA Tour schedule is kind of in flux all the time. And from my own personal standpoint, I was tired. Las Colinas is not a great golf course. Nothing great.
The players didn't love that course either, did they?
15 golf courses in Dallas that are better than that course or the Dallas area. It was okay. And they would use Cottonwood for a day across the street. But so I always thought you could find a better place to play. And this was something new. And I thought, okay, toughen it up a little. Don't let these guys shoot 65s at the drop of a hat.
Yeah.
And maybe this will be fun. But you always kind of knew it's always going to be hard to get here. And golf fans aren't going to be that patient about that. They're going to wonder why, with all the courses in North Dallas, you can't play at any of those, and why you're doing this. I mean, they understand the altruistic reasons for doing it, but they're probably not. That's not their biggest concern.
Right. Yeah.
Their biggest concern is their own commute and their own whatever is easiest for them. So I'm like you. I thought I was pretty glowing about this, given that I kind of thought this isn't going to go.
Well, and what's fascinating now is now, you know, it's going to be played at TPC Craig Ranch in McKinney. And all of a sudden you've got Dustin Johnson committed. You know, you've got all the popular Texans and golfers from the area here, and they're apparently doing great on sponsorship, which had taken a dive. It's amazing,
right,
the turnaround, and a darn shame that it's, you know, it's not in Dallas anymore.
Well, that's a part of the story, and Tim knows this part of the story too. All of these tournaments have a major charitable link to them, and they take a lot of pride in the money that they're able to raise during that period of time. And when it was in Dallas, the Momentous Institute was really struggling to get the kind of donations and receipts that you had seen when it was in Las Colinas. And I think at that point, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, Tim, but at that point, really everybody said we got to move on.
Yeah, the Salesmanship Club had always raised a ton of money at the event in Irving, in Las Colinas, and that didn't happen. And as you mentioned, sponsorships disappeared, and they were always kind of vague about the attendance.
Yeah,
down in Trinity Forest.
That's like, golf, though.
Yeah, we had. Yeah, I mean, everybody's a little vague, but they were. We had about 45,000 today. It's like, really?
Yeah.
Where were they?
They weren't hiding in the trees.
Yeah. Maybe they were. Maybe that was the problem.
Do you think that it makes sense to be in McKinney long term? It's an interesting. It's just such a move from you know, you're from Southern Dallas to McKinney. It's like you're in another state almost.
Yeah, it's funny. I was just talking to Brad Townsend about that, who covers a lot of golf here, and you know, covers the Mavericks too. But because they're building, the PGA is moving to Frisco, and they're building courses there. But they don't think the Nelson's going to be played there. Those courses are going to be for different things. So I guess they're going to have to see how it goes. I've played the Craig Ranch course one time, and I remember is being on the putting green and thinking, this really does feel like a pool table, and I shouldn't even be out here.
Yeah.
I have no business being on something this nice. But having been there, I mean, that through my eyes, that's a hike. Now, I realize a ton of the population is in Plano, Frisco,
sure,
McKinney these days, so it's not for them, but it is for a lot of people. I have no idea if the parking up there is going to be reasonable, like reasonable to access. I guess it is. It's a good course. I'm anxious to see what it looks like on TV. That was another problem with Trinity Forest, is in person, you kind of got that Lynx feel and that look, you know, when you're looking at it in three dimensions or whatever. When you watched it on TV, it looked like a bunch of boring par fours with no trees and no way to. What's the difference between the 11th hole and the 13th hole? They all look the same. And if you're out there, you can get a feel for it. And how something looks on TV in golf is pretty huge. I mean, do you have holes that will become memorable quickly? Even the Nelson over at Las Colinas, the 17th hole, the par three down over the water with all the rocks there and those things. You got to have a few signature holes. And Trinity Forest couldn't produce those.
I was going to ask you, just stepping away from Dallas, just broad overall. Obviously, you cover everything as a columnist. How do you think golf did with the coronavirus pandemic versus other sports?
They, you know, obviously they got off and running first with Colonial. I think it was June last year they moved it back to. That was really the first kind of American big time sporting event. And initially, they were talking about caddies in masks and officials. And I guess the officials had masks on for a while. And they had no fans at all at that event. But when you look what they got through, and when you realize, and we had argued about this some on the radio, but I was kind of wrong about it. I thought, you really need those cheers. But you really only need those on Sunday when you watch golf. Because when you're watching golf on TV, you're really just watching the players, the birdies, the stuff like that. Now, I thought golf suffered when they had the Masters in November, when they had the PGA and U.S. Open without fans. And when you don't have any kind of roars there, that makes a big difference. That's
weird.
A big loss. Maybe not as much as, you know, I think real quiet football and basketball games are difficult. Because of the nature of those sports. But golf overall, with only a couple of guys, a few guys here and there testing positive and missing a tournament or two, they put a lot into it, and they pulled off their season probably better than anybody else.
I wanted to say just one more thing about the Trinity Forest deal.
Sure.
And get your reaction to it. And as I think of the whole thing from the very beginning when I first heard of it, and I believe that was in 2013, and then through the development of the course, and the failure, there's no other way to put it, of having the tournament out there, I'm not sorry that Dallas tried to do this. And the public investment was there. It was not insubstantial. But the fact of the matter is this is a part of our city that has been ignored and underinvested in for generations.
Sure.
And so, hey, it didn't work, but we gave it a go. I mean, what do you think on that, Tim?
I would lean toward that way. I mean, it's better to try a potentially bad idea than to try nothing at all. I do wonder about, and you would know more about this than me, you know, with some of the things they did, the environmental concerns they have, moving all that land and maybe some species of plants that were, whatever you call that, dislocated upended. And there are some issues with all of that. And what happens to that now? And are the people who play golf there now going to keep playing golf? And is there a chance of, you know, doing something with that? Because that's what you want to do, is you want to enhance, you want to make, do what you can to help a neighborhood. But then the other thing they would have tried to do if the tournament stayed is, you know, to get some more diversity into golf and to get young golfers to play down there. I think 25 or 30% of the rounds are supposed to be public rounds.
Yeah.
And then they give them out kind of in contests or in donations. And so you would hope, you know, the next, you know, Tiger Woods and Tony Finau and those golfers maybe come along from Dallas. This area produces so many great young golfers. Could it produce young Black and Hispanic golfers with that sort of influence? And that's something that maybe gets lost a little, in that you know, whatever this effort was, it's not going to be able to pull that off.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. I think it was worth trying, even if they told you at the beginning there's about a 30% chance of success. I mean, I still think you make the effort and do what you can and see if you can pull it off.
I agree.
Yeah, and maybe this is a good way, as we wind down our conversation. You had talked about golf in the area and how many great players are produced here. Of course, you know, Jordan Spieth, and then Will Zalatoris was making a name for himself a couple weeks ago at the Masters. But
Scottie Scheffler.
Our next is Scottie Scheffler from Highland Park, right? And we're going to talk to Dawes Marlett, who's a executive with PGA America, next segment about the move to Frisco. But overall, in the landscape of DFW, and you're a Dallas guy, you've been at the paper forever, where does golf sort of fit into the sports pantheon in Dallas?
I'd say a little higher up than in a lot of cities. I think both with the history of tournaments here, even though the last major, and this is going to really date myself, but the last major here was the 1963 PGA out at DAC. Okay, I was eight, and we had moved to Dallas 2 weeks before that.
Is that right?
And so my mom took my brother and I to a practice round, and we got Arnold Palmer's and Gary Player's autographs and all the rest. Jack wouldn't give an autograph. He said, after the round, boys. And we weren't staying for the whole round. And I got to interview him about 2 years ago, and I told him that story.
Did he give you the autograph?
No, I gave him mine. I gave him mine. I said, I don't want yours. Here's mine. But he had a lot of fun with it. But I think there's been such a history through Byron Nelson to Ben Hogan through those years when golf was just barely on the landscape, and there were these great players from the state of Texas through Ben Crenshaw and then up to the modern era with Jordan and all the rest. I think the players, on top of having most years Colonial and Byron Nelson back to back, so there's 2 weeks where golf is a big deal, and it happens when, you know, the Cowboys aren't doing anything and the Mavericks might be done by then. So I think golf here, maybe other than, I don't know, maybe Florida or something, golf is about as big in this state, in this area, probably bigger than it is almost anywhere else.
Yeah, I always enjoyed Dan Jenkins writing about golf.
And, great and, writers, too. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The ultimate golf writer from Fort Worth.
No doubt.
You know, and to Tim's point earlier, of course, the great Lee Trevino, a product of public courses here in Dallas.
And Lee Elder.
Lee Elder, absolutely. And the first tee of Greater Dallas is at the Trinity Forest mm-hmm. golf course. So I hope you're right, Tim. I think, wouldn't it be great if the legacy of that place wasn't the failure of the Nelson, but the arrival of new players of color who can diversify this game that is so popular here?
The next Lee Trevino, that would be
worth every
better than a successful tournament. Probably.
Let's hope we move in that direction. Tim Kalishaw, thanks so much for joining us today on the podcast.
Really
coming up, we'll take a little look at the business of golf and dig into PGA America's new corporate headquarters just north of Dallas in Frisco with Dawes Marlette, senior director for PGA America. You're listening to the Deep Side of Dallas podcast with Paul Corliss and Rudy Bush. We'll be right back.
At the University of North Texas System, we embrace the future. Energized by new possibilities, we collaborate across institutions, disciplines, and industries to creatively imagine and implement solutions in our home region of Dallas-Fort Worth and beyond. Whether in Dallas, Denton, Fort Worth, or Frisco, throughout North Texas, across our state and beyond, the UNT system is fully committed to being a leader for the North Texas region.
Welcome back to the Deep Side of Dallas podcast. I'm Paul Corliss, Chief Communications Officer for the University of North Texas System, here with my co-host Rudy Bush of the Dallas Morning News, and we're talking golf here on the podcast. Thank you to Tim Kalishaw of the Morning News for joining us and providing his perspective on the Byron Nelson Open. And now it's time to bring on our second special guest as we pivot to talk about the business of golf and PGA America's move to Frisco. Dawes Marlette just joined us here in Texas from Florida. He's PGA America's Senior Director for Education and Employment. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks, gentlemen. Appreciate it.
So let's just start off by, I think, clarifying something that confuses a lot of people like me. What is the difference between the PGA Tour and PGA of America?
Yeah, it's an exciting question, and it's certainly one that is confusing to many. So in short, the PGA of America represents golf professionals. These are people who run the game and the business of golf, promote the game of golf, participate in the game of golf, and so on and so forth. They're really the heartbeat of what golf relies on to grow and to provide access to, you know, the public golfers across the country.
Kind of building that grassroots network for golf.
Absolutely, yeah. They play and teach the game and provide that experience to all those that want to play. The PGA Tour has professional golfers, and those are the ones that we all see on TV, making it look so easy day in and day out. We just came off of a wonderful major championship in Georgia, Augusta National,
which was a fun
and exciting event. And
a lot of fun.
Yeah, so the primary difference is the PGA of America, we're responsible for growing the game and business of golf, and the PGA Tour has professional golfers who play golf for a living and entertain us on television.
So I want to set the table for us to talk about PGA America's move from Florida to Frisco, Texas. So here's, I had to look up all that's happening in Frisco, and I understand you're about halfway completed on the first phase of the complex that is going to include 106,000 square foot offices, two new championship golf courses, an entertainment district, a new Omni Resort. All of that is about halfway, Dawes, and kind of where did this vision kind of come from, and how many of people like you are here?
Yeah, we've got roughly 60 people here already, with many more to come. I think we can expect 200 people from our staff to be here, thereabout. And so the building itself is well underway there in Frisco, Texas. You can see it when you're driving down 380. It's a massive structure. It's going to be exciting. That kind of sits adjacent to, two beautiful championship golf courses. We anticipate that building being open January of 2022, and we couldn't be more excited. We've been working with a lot of people in the community, with great designs, our board of directors, all of our PGA members. We've shown them mock-ups of what it looks like, and it's going to be certainly world-class. A great recruiting tool for our members and, a great area to train and develop their skills to make them, as effective as they possibly can be to grow the game.
It's pretty neat. Obviously, Frisco is becoming kind of Sports City USA.
Yeah.
Clearly, it's the Cowboys headquarters. I think the Soccer Hall of Fame is there. Do I have that right?
Soccer Hall of Fame. You've got the Major League Soccer team there.
Yeah, you've got some baseball.
Minor League Basketball, Minor League Baseball.
And now PGA of America. I guess the question sort of answers itself, but why Frisco? What about that attracted PGA of America? Why did you guys decide that North Texas was the place to make home?
Well, I think you two touched on some of it. It's got a wonderful history of golf and a tradition of golf. There's no question. It's in the center of the country. Imagine we've got 41 section offices across the country, including Hawaii. So to get our 28,000 men and women, you know, to a center, you know, centralized place, this just seemed to make some good sense. There's great relations with all aspects of Texas, Dallas, Texas, Frisco, Texas, and so on. But it was an opportunity to play golf year-round, an opportunity to reset and construct two wonderful world-class golf courses, to provide our members with, you know, the best-of-class training and development facilities, and to have a home in a very modern way that's going to promote the game of golf for the next several decades. I mean, the idea that we have, you know, part of this property is this is going to be this ridiculous short game course that's lit, you know, a putting course that's giant and lit. And so, you know, the public can come experience golf that maybe hasn't yet, or even those that want to do it. So the idea that we could bring competitive golfers and social golfers together, and even new golfers together in one centralized place and be embraced by, you know, the great town of Frisco and being a sports city, as you all said, it's been very exciting.
And how many holes of golf are part of the project?
36, two 18-hole golf courses.
And those are used for what?
They're going to be used for public play and championship play. So the public can play them, obviously. That's what the PGA of America represents, is the heartbeat of public golf. And, you know, as I mentioned, social and competitive. But unique to us is the idea that we've got championship golf on essentially every odd year.
Yeah.
And it's going to be very complimentary to the sports city that Frisco represents. We're going to have a lot of buzz about all these championships, whether it's men, women, or juniors. So we're very excited.
Yeah. So what does day in and day out business look like there? Because obviously you're training future professionals, you're welcoming the public, you're getting ready for tournaments, I guess, kind of at every level, I presume. Just take us through what a day in the life of the facility is going to look like.
Well, I think it's going to take on many different looks and feels. If you're part of the resort, that's going to be entertaining people that want to come in and experience golf at the highest level. Mm-hmm. If you're part of you know, the educational aspects of it, it's obviously people are coming in to refine their skills, learn new skills, test what they think they know, and go through that process to aspire to the best job they can get within their career trajectory. If you're part of the PGA of America and our responsibility to grow the game and business of golf domestically and globally, we've got everything that is represented from that perspective. And again, you know, there is a lot of administration that goes on to help support our 41 sections that are out there. And being in the Frisco area, we're very close to the North Texas PGA.
Yeah.
So we can provide, you know, wonderful support and a lot of collaboration. North Texas PGA will have their office right there as well, and be part of the footprint and part of the PGA family.
And roughly how many people are employed? Did you say that, Paul? And I blew right past it. Or how many people do we have out there just on a daily basis working there?
Oh my gosh, I don't know the specific number, but when you look at the entire footprint, I mean it's
hundreds.
You hate to guess. Talk about the hotel and the North Texas PGA Center. We got a coaching center available to the public. Most of what the PGA does from a headquarters perspective is all isolated to the PGA members, associates, and students of our 18 university partners across the country. But where our coaching center will be open to the public as well, where they can come get, they can get fit, they can learn the game of golf, take lessons from the best.
Paul Corliss needs that.
Yes.
Oh,
I don't know that for certain, Paul.
I'm one of the
worst
golfers that you'll ever meet.
Yeah.
We will sign you up.
Yeah.
We will sign you up.
Let's try to get him to where he can get the club back.
Yeah, I need something, that's for sure. Well, here's a question I was curious about. Did you look at any other sports headquarters as a model for this. There's you know, so many sports do headquarters with some fan elements, but golf is so unique in that you're actually able to golf your whole life, and that's such an integral part of your interaction with the sport. But did you guys look at any other sports properties or for ideas on this, or was it just something that a lot of smart people came together and sort of said, let's do this?
Well, I think there was a grand vision. You know, if you had a blank sheet of paper and you could do it however you wanted, what would it look like? Of course we looked at other ones. I mean, we've just up on Ponte Vedra Beach from Palm Beach Gardens is the tour. And they got sawgrass and everything that goes along with that. And certainly, while it's not unique to have a sort of footprint that encompasses a lot of things with, you know, an association like ours, the magnitude of this is unmatched. When you talk about just, it requires a lot of land, a lot of cooperation, a lot of collaboration, whether it's with the city or even University of North Texas or
Well, that's so UNT, where I work in my full-time job, we have a new campus being built in Frisco, and the city, the business community, everybody's been incredible to work with. I'm sure they have for you, and they kind of helped bring UNT and PGA together on a partnership as well. It's a special place. I know you were talking about how nice everybody is.
Yeah, I mean, UNT has been wonderful. When you have an opportunity to get smart companies and smart people within those companies to come together and collaborate and share, you can't help but have positive things come out of it as a result. My early experiences with UNT has been phenomenal. I mean, everybody's nice, everybody's collaborative, they're willing to help and reinvest and share best practices. We want to do all we can to help support even the student interns in the local community. It gets us better, provides us great resources, and then we can in return share our experiences and what it means to be part of an organization like the PGA of America that's a gold standard around the world for golf.
Do you expect you'll build any relationships with the other sports entities in Frisco? It seems like a natural to at least have some connectivity.
Yeah, I don't really think there's any way around it. I think everybody has a standard of excellence in all of these sports teams that you had mentioned, and just naturally greatness attracts greatness, and I'm sure there's going to be those kinds of things. I know that many of the leaders in the PGA speak to the leadership of the Cowboys as an example, so it's exciting for everybody involved.
I have a feeling you'll see more than a few Dallas Cowboys on your golf courses Before it's all said and done. I think that might be a little R&R spot for them. You know, it's funny, I'm a Dallas guy. I cover Dallas politics. That's what I write about. And anytime you have a big get like this, like the PGA of America, I think there's both regional pride and a little bit of regional jealousy around it. But and as we talked to Tim about the difficulties with the Nelson, you know, down in southern Dallas, The reality here, though, is that Frisco has done a really good job with economic development projects, and they've made some decisions as it relates to where they're going to put their resources, and a lot of those resources have gone to attracting big-get entities like the Cowboys, like the PGA of America, and I can't help but think that it's going to pay off for the region. And, you know, as Dawes was just saying, 1,000-plus employees, that is a huge economic driver, and that's just good for North Texas.
Yeah, and your tourism that'll come into the
Absolutely.
Resort, and you know, golf tourism is a huge thing. You've been in golf your whole life, you told us, Dawes. I mean, that's a significant part of the business too. You did mention PGA members, and I wanted to clarify for audience that may not be aware, what is a PGA member that you're serving?
It's a woman or a man who has dedicated their lives to a career in golf, to grow the game of golf, promote the game of golf, both the game itself and the participation of golf. And so often, one of the cool things about the PGA of America and the game of golf is we have an opportunity to go play the very golf course that the best in the world play. From those tees, playing from those pin placements, and at, you know, whatever level you want to, I would encourage a lot of us to, you know, use a forward set of tees.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
You know, it's good for our
play
golf
forward.
Ball inventory. But yeah, I mean, that's they really drive the economics of golf and the excitement of golf. So they're the conduit between you know, the tangible connection between everybody that we talk to that wants to know the difference between, so do you know Tiger Woods? Do you play with Tiger Woods?
Yeah.
And all the things, because they're working hard. They're the hardest working people you'll ever meet. I mean, they're getting there at 5 o'clock in the morning. In some cases, in the heat of the season, they're working 7 days a week. They don't necessarily.
It is an unbelievably hard job. 365, 7/24. Right?
That's exactly right. Yeah, they're dedicated beyond belief.
If
for
anybody
sure.
who thinks they're going to go be a golf professional and just play golf all day is out to lunch.
Yeah, and so the requirements. I mean, in order to become a PGA member, you've got to go through a rigorous education, a training and development program, which is about a 4-year experience. You have to be able to play the game of golf at a very competent level, so we got a player ability test. And then you got to go through a multi-level training program that's rigorous, assessed on the business of the game of golf, and how do you deal with all the interpersonal skills and leadership side of golf. So, yeah, it's definitely a comprehensive effort, and so when you become a member, you're essentially earning that credential. And it's sought after by the employers for sure. So it's exciting. I mean, golf has got traditions, and it's got traditional golf and very non-traditional golf. And it, you know, the $86 billion a year business is just a big, big business. And so we got golf professionals who are supporting the golf department, the pro shop that many people would know when they go to play and check in. We have golf professionals that are general managers of big golf facilities that most would never even know about. And we got golf professionals that are running non-green grass, you know, off-site retail facilities, golf professionals that are, you know, building golf courses. The depth and breadth of their capability and their capacity to do the job is pretty impressive.
So, Dawes, one of the things we know is that prior to the pandemic, we were seeing a little bit of a slip in the public's reception of golf and the popularity of golf, and then of course COVID hit, people needed to be outside, and they started picking up their clubs again. How do you hope the facility out in Frisco is going to rebuild people's interest in and desire to be on the course?
Yeah, that's a good question. We certainly have experienced the exuberance that golf brings forward during this pandemic. It's a sport that you can play your entire life. You know, there's no age limit to it. And so from the time you're a little kid dragging your clubs across the ground to the time you're a much older individual, perhaps even playing to your retirement days, you can do that. It's outdoors, so it's a healthy game. And that was one of the things that triggered this exuberance during this time that we're in now with COVID. They're coming out there in droves to play the game of golf. They love it. You know, the enthusiasm and excitement about golf seems to be back. Specific to the new development, we hope that the magnitude and the excitement and the contemporary look and feel of this is going to take care of itself. We do have a big responsibility. How do we retain all these golfers who have come back to the game that perhaps left it for a little bit? What do we do collectively across the country to keep them involved? And so we're working through a lot of strategies. Our golf professionals have been working very hard on, you know, building loyalty so that when things shift and there are other opportunities available to them that they can choose, that they're going to continue to stay with golf. We know they loved it. They've been overwhelmed by the support. So having a brand new facility in Frisco, having, you know, the quality of golf that will be available to the public should be very exciting. Should be very exciting to the two of you. I do expect the two of you to come out here in the summer of 22 when we get these courses opened up. So,
I better do some side practice.
Journalistic mission. We'll
yes.
check it out.
And there's a lot of golf in Dallas. There's a lot of golf in the surrounding areas that Frisco represents too. So all the PGA members are ready for them.
Well, we're thrilled to make the Dallas area the center of that universe. And if you need any barbecue recommendations or anything like that, now that you're in Texas from Florida, you let me know. I'm your guy for that. And Rudy will get you out to see some good bands, maybe.
Yeah, maybe one of these days we'll go.
But Dawes Marlatt, thanks so much for joining us, and look forward to keeping in touch as we progress, and of course working with you from a UNT standpoint. And to our listeners, thanks for checking us out. For Rudy Bush, I'm Paul Corliss. Thanks for listening to the Deep Side of Dallas podcast. We'll talk to you soon. The Deep Side of Dallas is presented by the Dallas Morning News and the University of North Texas System. Our show is produced by Aiden Barrett.
If you like what you heard today, please follow the Dallas Morning News wherever you get your podcasts. You'll also get our daily news roundup and special audio reports. And if you have questions, comments, or guest ideas, we want to hear from you. Just email us at deepside@dallasnews.com. Until next time, I'm Rudy Bush.
And I'm Paul Corliss. Thanks for listening.